I'm Dr. Theo Spirakis from Bexley Dental, and I can give you back your smile. With the all-on-4 dental procedure, I can put an end to broken and missing teeth and uncomfortable dentures. Book your free all-on-4 consultation now at bexleydental.com.au.
And now on the weekend edition, The Good Health Show, brought to you by our healthy friends, the BMI Clinic.
Yes, and here he is, the man that can simplify it all, Dr. Adrian Sartoretto is here from the BMI Clinic. Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for having me back. I was missing the place.
Yeah, it's good to have you back for 2019, and we've got a lot to do because we talk about weight loss, and there are different ways you can do it. You can have rapid weight loss. We have a listener we spoke to yesterday who's lost 15 kilos, and then you look at people like Joe Hockey, former treasurer. He's the ambassador to Washington. He had surgery. I don't remember which one. You would probably know, Adrian, what he had. Mikey Robbins also. These are very well-known people who've undergone different styles of weight loss, which is what you specialise in.
Absolutely. I mean, I think from memory, Joe Hockey had a laparoscopic sleeve. So this is the surgical procedure to remove 80% of the stomach, which is the most common procedure performed for weight loss in Australia today.
Before we look at different options, once it gets that far, can you just explain, because we talked when you first came on about BMI, and it's a bit of a play on words, because it's not body mass index. How do you know that you're overweight, first of all, and how do you assess weight loss then after that? Because so many people, even if you put on weight, they say, oh no, it's muscle, it's not fat, etc., etc. How can people get a gauge on where their health is at?
So I think this is a really important starting point. To begin with, BMI, or body mass index, doesn't... It's probably one of the better tools that we have on a population basis. But when it comes down to assessing the individual, it's actually not particularly accurate because...
I'm obese in a lot of them, the tests that I do. And, like, I'm not saying I'm a supermodel. I'm not even close, but I'm certainly not obese.
Well, I mean, this is the thing, right? I mean, humans have been weighing things now for about 6,000 years, and the technology hasn't changed all that much. At the end of the day, the scales are blind, and they'll tell you that a kilo of lead is worth as much as a kilo of gold. And obviously, that's not the case when it comes to the human body, because 100 kilos of muscle looks very different to 100 kilos of fat. So the first thing that you could probably do in your own home is take out a piece of string, measure it out to 80 centimetres if you're a woman, or 94 centimetres if you're a bloke, and try to get it around your midsection. So just above your hip bones, just underneath your belly button. And if the ends don't meet, then that suggests that you've got what we call visceral adiposity. So too much fat sitting around the internal organs. So that's one really good, reliable sign that something needs to change.
So just again, those figures. So 80 centimetres for a woman.
For a woman, and 94 centimetres for a man.
Now, and that's regardless of height, of build,
correct,
of all that. Okay,
so cool. So 94, round that there, mm-hmm. I wouldn't get to 94. You can tell I wouldn't get to 94. So yeah. I'd have a way to go. So I would be classed as what?
Well, so if the ends meet or overlap, yep, that suggests that you've got a healthy waist circumference.
Yeah, well, they won't. I know they won't.
So then it depends on how much. So if they still won't meet for a bloke at 102 centimetres, for a woman at 88 centimetres, then we call that severe increasing waist circumference. And that's highly associated with a lot of lifestyle issues, including things like type 2 diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, and so on.
Sorry, in that area there, mm-hmm. we talk about muscle and fat, but that area there would be fat, would it?
Well, it's a combination of a lot of different things.
But there's not a lot of muscle in there, is there?
There's a little bit of muscle. There's a lot of organs.
Yeah.
But that's the area where, you know, unhealthy fat will tend to deposit over other things.
Yeah.
So once you then identify that you do need to lose a bit of weight, how do you then measure weight loss? Do you guys use?
Yeah, so a better measure than the string method would be something like the DEXA scan that we spoke about actually last year at this stage. And so this uses x-rays, very, very tiny doses of x-rays. Literally stand outside for a couple of hours and you'll get the same dose. But what this tells us is exactly how much muscle, fat and bone you have in your body. And this is by far the gold standard. Now, when it comes to weight loss, I mean, most of us still use the scales, even though it's an intrinsically flawed approach to measuring the outcome. And so when studies, for example, report on weight loss outcomes following an intervention, they'll give an average. But there are a couple of problems with that. The first thing is that an average, by definition, is one number that describes what happens to many people. And so by definition, some people will be above average and others below average. And so that number isn't necessarily relevant to many people. And so another way to look at things is, well, what's the likelihood of someone achieving a minimum weight loss of, let's say, 10% of their weight? And 10% is an important number because that's where we start to see the health benefits of weight loss kicking into to blood pressure issues and blood sugar issues and cholesterol and so on.
So, John, you've been trying to lose a bit of weight over the past few months or so. Is this an issue where people start and try whatever method they're using, don't see results on the scale, and then just lose interest in it and stop, whereas what the scale is telling them may not be accurate?
It may not be accurate, especially if they're exercising quite heavily, and especially if they're sort of they don't have as much weight to lose as some others. So if their BMI, for example, is sort of in the upper range of overweight or perhaps lower range of obesity, so BMI sort of 25 to 35, if you're exercising a lot, you might actually find that fat loss is being equaled out by muscle gain, and the scales won't recognise that, and that can be very discouraging for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's right, because you don't see the results. Yeah,
absolutely.
And then there's also the situation where if you work with someone who, say, on a Saturday leaves at 4 and leaves packets of, lollies and chocolates and
every single day it's the same thing. Will brings those in.
Yeah, he brings
them in.
I have the stuff laid in front of me. It's very, very hard.
Yeah.
So, all right, so you're in that situation.
Yep.
Whether you've got your string is struggling to meet
it's
up.
It's cutting into your size.
All right, so there's a range of, and I'm looking at the range of therapy. So lifestyle modification is basically just changing the way you do things, changing what you eat.
And this has actually been really well studied now. So thousands and thousands of people have been looked at in very high quality studies where week in and week out they're seeing professionals, dietitians, exercise specialists, behavioural therapists and so on. And perhaps the surprising thing is that when you look at those people 12 months later, on average, they've only lost about 5% of their weight. So if they're starting off at about 100 kilos, on average, they will have lost 5 kilos.
Over what period of time?
12 months.
Oh, wow.
And this is one of the big troubles. We all remember the one or two that loses 20 and 30 kilos, but we remember them because they're the one or two.
Mm.
And in fact, if you apply that threshold rule, so what proportion will lose at least 10% of their weight, the numbers are only under 5%. So 1 in 20 will achieve that outcome, but the remainder actually won't do anywhere near as well. Now, that can be quite discouraging, and for some people, that'll put them off weight loss for another 12 months or however long it might be. But it's actually really important at that point to say, well, actually, I'm in the majority. This didn't work for me, so what's the next step?
So not to be downward looking at it, but to actually look at it as, well, a lot of other people struggle just as much as I am.
I mean, we struggle because our ancestors survived the last ice age. I mean, in the 1900s alone, 70 million people around the world died of famine. And in the century before that, it was over 100 million. And so the human body is actually very well designed to withstand famine and to be adaptable.
That's I've never heard it put like that.
Yeah.
So that's why people at home listening now, that's why you can't lose weight.
Yep.
Because our bodies are designed in case there's a famine or our food source goes. Well, that explains why it's so hard.
Well let's look, because I'm looking at some of these, and when you see these, this you think to yourself, gee, I want to do that. That's your instinctive approach, which is you think to yourself, surely this is I can do. I don't need a crutch. Isn't that the attitude a lot of people have?
A lot of people sort of take the opinion that they're taking the easy way out. But I think that's like saying you're taking the easy way out to treat any other disease. I mean, your body is actually trying to fight you against weight loss. And for as long as you've lost weight, your body will forever try to push you back up. As we gain weight as fat, we not only increase the size of our fat cells, but we also increase their number. But as we lose weight, those same fat cells just shrink, that we never lose any. And the problem is as they shrink, they start to change the hormonal signaling within the body to say, hey, we're on empty, we need more energy. And that does a couple of things. It changes our experience of hunger. It also changes our metabolic rate. And so it stacks the dice in favour of weight gain.
All right. I want to go through, because we've got balloons, we've got endoscopic sleeve gastroplasty.
Yep.
We've got lap sleeve. Look, there's a whole
host of
options. I'm going to get you
options.
To pronounce the
names.
Sure. and you look at them and you think, gee, you know, there's a whole range. We're going to go through these and simplify it all. Before we do, though, Margaret's got a question. Hello, Margaret.
Hello, guys. You're doing a wonderful job there.
Thank you, Margaret. Appreciate it. Have you got a question for the doctor?
Yeah, I have. People talk about middle age spread. I mean, I don't eat any more than I normally do. I ride my bike, I walk, I run. I mean, I'm 67, but I mean, I still seem to stay the same. And people say, oh, don't worry about it, it's middle age spread. What has that got to do? Is that such a thing?
I mean, there is an observation that as we get older, we tend to put on a little bit of weight. And because it is so common, we tend to joke about it. But, I mean, if you look at the rates of diabetes that are starting to pop up and all of the health-related consequences of carrying extra weight, it's actually not a joking matter. Yes. And so if you haven't if you haven't been able to shift some of that through some of the changes that you've already mentioned, then it's probably time to step it up a notch, either with the diet or with the exercise, because we also become habituated to the type of exercise that we're doing. So if you're starting, for example, cycling, and you continue cycling for 6 months, the amount of energy that you're burning at the beginning of those 6 months is actually quite different to what you're burning at the end of those 6 months, because your muscles adapt. They become much more efficient at what they're doing. And so you do have to sort of keep your body on its toes in some ways.
So there's nothing physiologically that happens to our bodies that makes us put on weight as we get older and older?
Well, for women in particular, the change around menopause will change the amount of lean mass or muscles in particular that we carry, and that will have consequences on our metabolic rates. But generally, as we get older, we tend to do less and less in general terms.
Look, we might be able to answer more of Margaret's question as we go through this. Look, thank you very much for your call. 16 minutes past 3 past 2 in Queensland. Let's get to the first of these. These are intragastric balloons. So I'm assuming that the it is what it says. It's a balloon that's put in your stomach, is it?
Absolutely. So these have actually been around for a long time now. So about 20 odd years in Europe and in places in South America, and about 12 or 13 years in Australia now. I think the early uptake of the balloons, there were some issues in terms of actually knowing how to best use them, and also in terms of medications in, you know, managing some of the initial side effects. But they're actually quite an effective weight loss tool. So these are devices. They're balloons. They're filled up with salt water and a special dye. And they're inserted through the mouth into the stomach in a 10 or 15 minute procedure.
Wow. So you don't, it's not, you don't make any incision.
No cuts whatsoever. Home, same day.
So you just slide it down. Is that right?
Well, using a camera. So we'll pass it through the mouth and into the stomach using the camera.
It just sits there, does it?
It will stay within the stomach. And what it actually does is it tends to make food fill the stomach from the top down rather than from the bottom up, so that you feel fuller sooner in the course of a meal. And because the food then has to get around the balloon to leave the stomach, you actually stay fuller for longer. Now, there are two different types of balloons available in Australia. One, which is the what I call the granddaddy of them, which is the Orbira, has been around now for about 12 odd years. And at the end, that stays in for 6 months' time. And during that time, you can't change it. You can't make it bigger. You can't make it smaller. It does what it does for that 6 months. Now, at the end of the six-month period, on average, you'll see about a 12% weight loss. And in terms of what percentage of the population will lose at least that 10%, it's about 50%. The SPATS 3, or the other balloon that's available in Australia, is an adjustable balloon, and it stays in for twice as long. So that's significant because you can make it bigger to achieve more weight loss. You can make it smaller to relieve some side effects. And the reason why being able to make it bigger is important is because the stomach is a very adaptable organ, as I've already sort of mentioned. And after about 3 or 4 months, the stomach will learn how to pass food around the balloon. And so people will start to find at that time that their weight loss starts to slow down because they're able to eat a little bit more. Now, with an adjustable balloon, you can make it a little bit bigger, and that will see another round of weight loss. But the thing with balloons, and this is true of medications as well as balloons, as well as shake diets really, is that these are training wheels, right? These are, with training wheels, you put them on the bike to stay on the bike, not to ride the bike for you.
Because this is what I think, once they come out, then do you face a serious issue of
weight regain? That can be a problem, especially if you treat it, I guess, simplistically. The fact is that with training wheels, I think this is the best analogy I have, with training wheels, if you haven't practiced riding the bike while the training wheels are on, then by the time they come off, don't expect to be able to ride it. You'll probably fall flat on your backside.
Okay.
And this is what the studies show. So with intragastric balloons, the amount of support from dietitians, psychologists, exercise and so on, both while the balloon is in place as well as after it's removed, is entirely predictive of how well you're able to maintain that weight loss.
Okay.
Who would this be suited to, these particular balloon treatments? If someone at home is thinking, would I be someone that this would work for? What is it, someone who's maybe 10, 20% of the, overweight? What's the gauge?
The BMI cutoff starts at 27 and higher. So if your BMI is 27, or if it's a 30 or 40, you're an eligible candidate for this. Now, if you've got a BMI of 40, there are arguably better procedures out there. But if you're not willing to consider those sorts of procedures, and in my opinion, the best weight loss intervention you can have is the one that you'll actually have. And so if surgery is something you're not willing to consider, then this might be a realistic option for
those who don't really get BMIs. Just give us an example, like a 60-kilogram woman, that's a healthy weight at 60 kilograms. If she's like 75 kilograms, is that...
Well, put it this way. Anyone who's sort of almost irrespective of height, if you're over 90, 95 kilos, you're almost always obese.
Yep. All right. This is fascinating. And the balloons at the end of the period of the balloon, say 6 months, does it just, do you take it out or does it just...
It comes out, the stomach is left as it was. Okay. You don't tend to find that sort of hunger shoots through the roof because by the time it comes out, the stomach has already habituated and it's not really having all of its effect. And so there are other methods that you can use to help stabilise your weight if you're finding it difficult. So, for example, you can use medications either while the balloon is in place or after it's come out. But
that's balloons. Now, we've got some emails here which I want to deal with shortly.
Sure.
But there's also, we're going to take a break and come back and get into what's called endoscopic sleeve gastroplasty.
Correct.
It's a revolutionary way of doing it, very cutting edge. Now, it's introduced to Australia by someone called Dr. Adrian Sartoretto.
Sounds very about intelligent.
He's a good mate. He actually lives next door.
Yeah, all right. No, this is yours.
Amazing.
So we've got the man here to talk about this. So we're going to go through it. This is fascinating.
I'm finding it really interesting.
Yeah, it's coming up in just a moment. We'll do that and we'll go through all of that and you can explain in a very simple way how it works as well. That's
absolutely
coming up. But one of the emails here from Craig, I don't think you can answer this. He says he's 6'4". What weight should he be? So he's 6'4", which probably dates him. So how much is 6'4" in centimetres? Because I know 180 centimetres is about 5'11".
194 or
190,
something.
Yeah. He's quite tall. So what you...
Around about?
You're going to have to give me some
right, time. Why don't you do that? Why don't we do that during the break?
94
you give him
kilos.
94 he should be. Okay.
Yeah, or less.
Let us know, Craig, what you are. Less than 94 you should be. We'll come back in a moment. It's the Good Health Show with Dr. Adrian Sartoretto, Erin Molan, and me along for the ride. It's our Good Health Show with Dr. Adrian Sartoretto. We're talking about different ways you can lose weight. Now, this one, he'll help me with this, endoscopic sleeve gastroplasty. Oh, very good.
ESG.
ESG.
Now, you've introduced this.
To the country. I didn't come up with it.
No, but you've introduced it. So
absolutely.
Explain it. Who's it right for and what does it do?
So this is a procedure that was developed about 7 or 8 years ago through a number of major centres in North America, the Mayo Clinic, Weill Cornell Medical Centre and others, Brigham and Women's. And what this involves is essentially going through the mouth using a camera and a special tool sitting on the end of that camera. And it allows us to stitch the stomach up internally without making any incisions or cuts. We don't remove any part of the stomach. It takes about an hour under a general anaesthetic, as you would well imagine.
Yep.
And at least in my practice, this isn't the case everywhere, but people are usually well enough to go home the same day.
Wow.
The recovery
makes it smaller.
Makes it smaller and also makes it slower to empty. And so not only do you fill up sooner, but you stay fuller for longer.
So imagine a stomach. So where do you sew? Do you kind of sew it in half and does it work or what size do you design?
In a very rough way of speaking, the stomach sort of looks like a little bit of a jelly bean. It is
okay.
A little bit tapered at one end, at the outlet. But what we do is we go on the outside curvature. So not the inner concavity,
okay,
but the convexity. And we bring that in. And so we end up with a little pouch at the very top of the stomach, which essentially functions as a reservoir. That's where your food will go in. And then we bring in the rest of the stomach so that it forms a bottleneck to slow down the emptying from the stomach.
God, technology is incredible, isn't it?
So the recovery with this procedure is about 2 or 3 days. And, you know, a little bit of cramping or some pain or some nausea in that time. You need to stick to a liquid-only diet for about 3 weeks after that. And at the end of 12 months, the average weight loss in our practice is 20% weight loss.
Wow. More significant than the balloons, isn't
well,
it?
Well, so it's more significant than the Orbera, certainly. So the Orbera, if you recall, was about 12% weight loss, and 50% will lose at least 10%. With your SPATs, which I don't think we actually mentioned, the adjustable gastric balloon will give you 18% weight loss, and at least 85% will get past that 10% threshold. With the ESG, it's about 20% at 1 year weight loss, and about 92% will get over that 10% barrier.
Okay, so your instinct, because everyone goes for, these days everything's being sold as natural, this is natural, that's natural, there's all natural ingredients.
Yeah.
So people are thinking, well, this is how my stomach is naturally.
Mm-hmm.
So you go and do that, they're going to think, oh, well, you know, am I changing the function of my body?
Yep.
So that's their reaction to that.
Yeah, look, the first thing I'm going to say, and this is going to be a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's kind of not. I mean, natural means very little. I mean, arsenic is natural, mercury is natural, snake venom is natural. Mm. There are plenty of natural things that will kill you. There are also plenty of natural things that will save you. I think at the end of the day, something like this where we're changing the anatomy of the body, obviously you only do it if there's going to be the benefit there. As I've sort of already made mention, our bodies were designed to withstand famine, not excess. And arguably, you could say that what we're doing in these sorts of procedures is changing the body and the stomach so that it's more appropriate for the environment that we find ourselves in.
I mean, mean, there's four people here. There's, in fact, five people in this little area here. Four of the five are all wearing glasses. So if we wanted to do it naturally, we'd take our glasses off, wouldn't we?
Well, that's
and
exactly
we'd be
right.
bumping into the doors.
Absolutely.
So that's the thing. So that's I guess that's a reasonable analogy, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the human body is a great and wondrous thing, but it can't do everything. And I think it's important to understand its limitations. And sometimes it does need a little bit of help. And there's no guilt or, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that.
You look at the Stone Age or a time when we didn't have any of this technology in the environment that humans lived in, it's very different now. We live in an environment where there's a lot of things that are unnatural and our bodies weren't designed for this particular environment.
Undertook this little... I took it on myself to try to document some of the changes that our environment has experienced in the last sort of 120 years. And it's absolutely amazing. I mean, we didn't have tractors up until 1910. Right?
Wow.
1910, 1920. Before that, everything was pulled by oxen and horses. Mm. We had the first fridges, electrical refrigerators, in the 40s. Right? Before that, it was ice boxes, which were tiny little things. We didn't have much that we could actually keep in the fridge for long periods before it perishes. Packaging only really got to a point where we could have things that would last a little bit longer in the cabin, in our pantries, in about the 50s or thereabouts.
Mm.
That's also when fast food started to make a bit of a comeback. In the 80s, that's when we started to see things like the bliss point of food, which is where engineering of food became relevant, but also microwaves became a thing in the 80s. We didn't have them before that. And so if you look at the sum total of all of those tiny little changes that have happened to our environment over the last 120 years, it's no wonder that we're in the position that we're in. And I think that the lesson to take from that is that in the face of hundreds of small changes, you cannot expect to lose significant weight by making simply one change.
That's really well put. Who would this suit then? So we've looked at who the balloons would suit.
Yep.
Who would this ESG, the stitching of the stomach suit, if someone's sitting at home thinking, is this for me, well, how would they know?
The BMI for the ESG should be over 30, and most people would suggest it should be over 35. But I think that there are going to be extenuating circumstances. So it really depends on the health consequences you're suffering as a result of your weight. If your BMI is 32, for example, and you've got high blood pressure and prediabetes, then I think that's a realistic and good option for you, as long as, again, this is a newer procedure. We've got to be mindful that with newer procedures, there are going to be some things that we don't know. We think that those risks with this sort of procedure are relatively low because it's now been around for 7 and 8 years, and we're not cutting out or removing permanently any part of the stomach. However, there are much more well-established surgical procedures that are available. And if you're someone who's thinking about having one of those and is open to that, arguably stick with what's been around longer.
Yeah, so you you go through all that with people, do
absolutely.
You?
Know, absolutely, absolutely.
That's being really straight up, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because this is the procedure that you've brought in, but you're saying that still, you know, 7 or 8 years isn't that long in these terms.
This is one of the, I guess, the catch-22s. We've got to strike the balance, right? A lot of people, in fact, if you look at people who are eligible for weight loss surgery, the rates of uptake are actually pretty stable. It's about 1.6% of people who are eligible for weight loss surgery will actually have it in any 1 year. And the reasons why, you know, the other 98.4% aren't having surgery is mixed, but sometimes it's because they don't want irreversible surgery, they don't like the risk, the cost, whatever else. So for those people who will never consider surgery, there are now options on the table.
So these are non-surgical, aren't they?
These are
non-surgical. We've spoken about these ones.
Yeah.
How do you work out your BMI?
So you take your weight in kilos.
Yes.
And divide it by your height in meters, but square the height before you divide the weight.
Okay, so square your height in meters and divide it by
weight.
Okay, yeah. Great.
Robert's called in because Robert's actually had, I think you had surgery. Is that right, Robert? Is that right?
That's exactly right. I had gastric sleeving.
Oh, right, yep.
This is where you took out 80% of my stomach.
Yep.
I've only got 20% of my stomach left.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason I had it done is because I was 140 kilos. I'm now down to 89 kilos.
Mm-hmm.
I had type 2 diabetes. I had cholesterol. And I was on a CPAP machine.
Yep.
Now, it's been 10 months ago now since I've had it. I'm no longer on a sleep apnea machine. I've no longer got cholesterol, and my diabetes is down below 6.
That's fantastic, Robert. Yep. Congratulations.
And I am so full of energy. I have joined the RFS. I've got so much energy now, and my wife said, if you like your energy on his bunny.
Hey, Rob, do you mind me, broad ballpark, what age are you?
I'm 68.
Right,
fantastic.
Okay.
And Robert, did you kind of think long and hard about it? Were you worried about going down the surgical option?
I had tried a lot of different diets. I'd tried different things to try and lose weight. And it was more a willpower thing for me rather than anything. this stopped that willpower. I can only eat a small amount of food.
And life is a billion times better.
Now where if we go out, my wife orders a meal, and I say, whatever you're eating, dear, I'll have a little bit of yours.
Oh, she must hate that. That's my worst.
I see you're down in the near the Shire there, Robert, so you can take up surfing that we mentioned a moment ago as well.
I could, yes.
There you go. All right. Hey, that's fantastic. That's lovely to hear, isn't it? And it sounds like you're bouncing around. That's really good.
I am.
Did you find, Robert, how did you find people's reaction when you told them that you were getting the surgery? Is there still a bit of stigma, do you think, surrounding it?
People were a little, not stigma, but people were going, you mean you're going to lose 80% of your stomach? And I went, yeah, but I've looked into this. And the thing that's really affected me is I can walk down the street now and people will walk past me and then they come back and they go, oh, is that you?
How good.
Hey,
in a good way.
Robert.
Well done.
In a good way, yes.
Thanks, you so
Robert.
Much for the call, mate. Thank you.
No worries.
It's not about... So that's, is that laparoscopic sleeve gastrectomy?
That's correct.
It's so hard, isn't it? You're doing well.
I wouldn't be able to work in your place at all.
So the laparoscopic sleeve gastrectomy or lap sleeve or stomach sleeve or sleeve surgery has been around now in Australia for about 14 odd years and it's currently the most popular weight loss procedure in the country. So of people having weight loss surgery for a first time, about 85% of those will be for a laparoscopic sleeve. So this involves obviously a general anaesthetic, some keyhole incision, and then removing about 80% of the stomach.
So it's permanent.
It's a permanent procedure. Mm. The recovery is about 3 days in hospital and then can take sometimes, 2 to 4 weeks, depending on how quickly you bounce back. And the average weight loss with that surgery is about 25% of your baseline. So Robert actually did a little bit better than average. He lost about 36% of his total weight.
Oh, well done.
So he's done quite well. Now, that surgery, I mean, it works. It's very straightforward. It does have about a 3 to 5%, depending on where you look, risk of major complications. And at 12 months, we tend to see about the maximum weight loss, 12 to 18 month period. It's not all that uncommon to see a degree of weight rebound after the 18-month mark. And look, there are a couple of other issues with the sleeve surgery. First of all, it does put you at risk of long-term iron deficiency and vitamin B12 deficiency. So those vitamin levels need to be monitored and replaced proactively.
Is that because you just can't absorb enough or
correct.
You can't consume enough?
So your stomach isn't making the acid that's required and other enzymes that are required to digest and absorb our food. So it does need to be monitored. A little bit worryingly, there's a few new data coming to light. So about 1 in 5, up to 1 in 4 people after a lap sleeve will end up with quite bad reflux that might require acid medication. And there are some emerging evidence to suggest that at 3 years after a laparoscopic sleeve, there are about 1 in 6 people will experience new precancerous changes of the lower part of the esophagus, the food part. So it does need to be monitored. Yeah. And it's not, the whole idea of sleeve and leave, I think, is a problematic one. If you're going to have a laparoscopic sleeve, if you're going to have bariatric surgery, don't expect that surgery is the last point of contact.
Right. You need to keep...
There's going to be maintenance. You need to be in touch with your doctor and with your care providers.
Yeah. Okay. And look, there's two other... Lap band, that's become a little bit...
It's going the way of the dodo, unfortunately. Well, not unfortunately, but a lot of people are still very much interested in lap band, and I think that's because it's been around for a very long time, well over 20
years.
It's
probably the only one I recognised of all the list that you brought in.
And so the lap band is essentially a belt that sits over the very top of the stomach, and you can make the belt tighter or looser depending. And if you make it quite tight, then that really slows down the passage of food into the stomach. And so you find yourself not being able to eat very much. Now, the average weight loss of the laparoscopic sleeve over the course of 12 months is about 15-16%. So, it's not as great as, say, the laparoscopic sleeve over a 12-month period. Although once you factor in the rebound that you see with a lap sleeve, you do tend to find that lap band and lap sleeve tend to meet in the middle. The issue with the lap band is that there's a really high rate of complications. Mm. So,
what material is the band?
It's medical grade silicon.
Okay.
But what you tend to find is that over the course of 10 years, about 1 in 5 will end up coming to some sort of complication that requires the removal of the band. And so whereas 6 years ago, this was more than 50% of weight loss surgeries in the country, currently it's about 5% of weight loss procedures in this country.
All right. And we'll finish this off. Gastric bypass. What's...
Gastric gastric bypass is actually an older procedure than the lap sleeve. It's been around now probably going on 30 years. Now, what this involves is fashioning the stomach into a very small pouch, perhaps the size of a large plum or a small peach, and then bypassing 1.5 to 2 metres of small intestine. Now, without going into too fine a detail, I mean, this is essentially the end of the line weight loss surgery. There is one more beyond this, but it's very rarely done. Now, this is the best surgery to have if you've got established diabetes, especially if you're a diabetic requiring insulin, because this is the one that's going to give you the most opportunity to actually cure your diabetes. I mean, one of the things that we forget here is that diabetes is a curable illness, and surgeries arguably are the best way to cure them. So bypass gives you the best bang for your buck there, but it does have a lot of nutritional deficiencies. Because you are bypassing that 2 metres of small intestine, you need to be monitored very carefully.
How does that work, bypassing it?
So imagine you've got a hose, a garden hose, yeah. Chop off the last 2 metres, and then reconnect them, forming a Y down the line. Okay. And so what happens is the original part, the original first part of that hose is connected to the stomach, but it now joins on to the rest of the small intestine much later on. That's a very simplified version.
That just gives me something to picture, yeah.
All right, so look, we've gone through all of those. Very interesting. And people, you're our sponsor, of course, the BMI Clinic. So people can go onto your website, they can see all the information that they need and find out
absolutely.
More if they can.
Absolutely. So through the website on bmiclinic.com.au. The one thing I probably ought to mention without being too long-winded here is we did miss one major group, which was medications. So medications, the most effective way weight loss medication at the moment in Australia is an injectable medication. It's given once a day.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, so this is something called Saxenda. Mm. It's been around for about 2 years or so now. And now this is, if we're talking about weight loss outcomes, so that the average weight loss seen with something like Saxenda is just shy of 10%. So it's about double what you get if you were just going through a diet and exercise professionals, but about half as much as a balloon. And if you look at what proportion of people will lose at least 10% of their weight, with something like Saxenda, it's about 20 to 25% will get to that. So the large majority actually won't quite reach those important numbers. But where we're starting to find things moving now is that we're able to combine, say, for example, medications along with either endoscopic procedures or surgeries to improve the effectiveness. One thing that I will say, and I feel very strongly about this, Duramine, which has been around for a very, very long time.
What's Duramine?
Duramine is a weight loss drug from the 70s. Okay. It's essentially a form of amphetamine. It basically kills your appetite. But it's used in very, very high doses. And if it ever had to pass TGA now, I don't think it would actually quite get there by itself. And this is still the most commonly used weight loss medication in Australia. And that's because it's accessible. We actually don't have that many.
So it's like a suppressant, is it?
It's an appetite suppressant.
Do bodybuilders use them in a lot of...
I mean, I don't know what they do. They may well do if they're going through their shredding cycles. But essentially, I really encourage people to not consider using those sorts of things. There are much better options available.
All right. You hang on there for a second because I want to tell people about your place because you're our sponsor, the BMI Clinic. You can make an appointment at the BMI Clinic, Australia's specialist in non-surgical and surgical weight loss. We've talked about it here, established in 2005, specialising, and you've heard all this, minimally invasive and non-surgical weight loss techniques. Dedicated team of surgeons, gastroenterologists, you've met them here over the last few weeks, bariatric physicians, nurses, dietitians, psychologists, exercise physiologists, all working together to help you guide you to your weight loss goals. So you can take your first step to a healthy weight right now. Visit bmiclinic.com.au and learn more about the team and their range of weight loss programs. The BMI Clinic, it's pretty simple, Sydney and Brisbane, and the website is bmiclinic.com.au. So just bmiclinic.com.au